to Anime Death Spiral, the only anime podcast that was acquitted on all charges. Just want to say thank you. We had a great legal team sticking up for us out there.
I want to thank the fans for standing with us. I want to thank God, big man number one up top, keeping his eye on us.
Kami-sama.
Yeah, you know, Kami-sama.
Looking down on us.
Keeping us out of trouble. You know, as long as you stay faithful, God will always smile on you. That's why the podcast has gotten so popular, you know.
Yep. I want to thank Jesus, and I want to thank Goku. I want to thank Sasuke, not Naruto.
Do you see those Goku squaring up with... Monkey King posters that China was putting out, I guess, for the Olympics?
No, what?
You see those things? They go fucking hard. They're cool as hell. Goku and Sun Wukong, these, like, promotional posters. They're, like, these illustrations. Let me see. What were they even for? I'm not even sure. Let's see.
I mean, is it just to dunk on Japanese people and culture?
No, they both look cool. It's not like...
Oh, it's not like...
Oh, I think it's a FIFA thing. It's a FIFA thing. It's to hype up Japan versus China FIFA matches.
Okay.
But they're cool. They look dope. They're
cool.
Well,
no, I wasn't sure if it was going to be like, like character fighting kind of thing. Like, hey, Sun Wukong can totally kick Goku's ass. That kind of thing. But no, if they're in a friendly rivalry, sanctioned sports competition, well, that's just international diplomacy right there. I think the world is finally healing.
I think it's just dudes being cool. I don't know if it's supposed to be provocative or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
Check this out. This is dope.
Let's see.
I found one.
Oh, hell yeah. Okay.
Yeah, these are cool.
Yeah, these are dope.
It's dope.
Oh, they're specifically doing Sun Wukong from Black Myth, the video game Black Myth.
Well, that's, you know, that's what he looks like.
I mean, yeah, but I think that there is a general understanding of what the character looks like, and then there is this image, which is the exact character from the character model in the game.
He's a very visually well-established character, Sun Wukong.
Yeah. You know? Well, he's a monkey man. I mean, that is the bare minimum. Like, if you showed me, like, a Sasquatch, you know, that's a Sun Wukong right there. You know, Yeti, that's a Sun Wukong. Any kind of, like, large monkey... Gorillas? Those are Sun Wukongs.
Oh, this is incredibly disrespectful. Japan has always had a pretty mixed to low result in the World Cup. They've been kind of cursed for a long time, but they do have a history of kind of annihilating a bunch of the smaller Asian teams and then moving up to the World Cup semi-qualifiers. And then kind of washing out against like a European or a South American team. It's happened a lot. You know, mm-hmm. This year already, it seems like they've knocked out Myanmar. They've taken out Korea.
And you're talking about soccer, right?
Historically, yes. Sure. Yeah.
Tell me, Remy, moving on in a smooth transition type of way. Do you like how I did that?
You don't want to talk about soccer?
I don't want to talk about soccer anymore.
You don't want to talk about football?
No, especially not since we've got to deal with the World Cup in Seattle coming up here pretty soon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's going to be a whole thing.
Going to be real contentious this year. I can't wait. I pray for you. It's going to be a wild one.
Yeah, I'll let you know how that goes. Mm-hmm. Tell me, did you you see any movies lately? You go to the theater lately? See these movies coming out?
Well, I always see all the big premieres. Haven't seen Avatar yet. I'm getting around to it. I'll get there.
Sleeping on that one since Christmas. You've been talking about it since then.
I know. I've been talking about it for a while. Still haven't seen it. I'm gonna get there. The last one I watched a cam of. I'm not proud to admit that, but it happened. This time I want to see the full HD release, you know.
You want the IMAX experience.
Yeah, without the people like chewing on the tape, you know.
Someone whispering Russian dubs into the camcorder as they record. They're just kind of generally breaking down the plot as it goes.
They're weird asides.
Yeah.
That's not realistic. That's not how it would work in real life. If we actually found Avatar, that's not how it would work.
I mean, I'm not joking at all when I say that I've been in movie theaters where people just do that at the movie. They don't even have to be recording to like upload it. They just like people just have no problem letting other people next to them loudly know what their current thoughts about the movie are. That just happens.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've been to matinees. Yeah, I know. I understand.
So that's why I haven't been to the movie theater in a while, I would say.
I thought it was because that you didn't want to see anything.
Well, that's the other part of it. I don't think I've been into a movie theater in probably like 4 or 5 months since the Chainsaw Man movie came out in theaters. That was the last movie that I saw in theaters up until over the weekend. And I believe that you did this as well.
You went and saw the Lord of the Rings re-release.
No, I didn't have that much of my time to waste.
I also did. I did also do that. Oh, you didn't? Oh,
no,
okay.
No, I like...
You didn't sit through 5 hours of Lord of the Rings extended edition in a theater?
No, unfortunately, I'm like an adult person with a life and a house that I have to take care of. I can't just drop down into a movie theater for 13 hours. What, do you think I am some kind of slob?
You don't have enough time to spend. I mean, you have to go home and replay Fallout New Vegas for the fifth time. That's pretty
important.
Time consuming.
That's important, yeah. God damn it.
I mean, shit, you can't waste 5 hours on some movie. You've got Fallout to play.
Well, that is true, which is why I split the difference and I decided to waste 90 minutes on a movie, which is perfectly okay and expected and reasonable. 90 minutes is totally fine to waste on a movie. I just wish that I hadn't wasted my 90 minutes on... I went to go see Return to Silent Hill. I returned to Silent Hill, baby. I sat down... And Saturday, I put on Christoph Gans Silent Hill from 2006, 2005.
Yeah, 2006.
2006. And rewatched that. And then I went and I got in a theater and I returned to Christoph Gans Silent Hill 2, The Return.
Hell yeah, brother.
I don't know if I can agree to that. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah, brother.
Have so much confusion about this movie, about the decisions that were made, about how we got here, like just in general. I do blame Christoph Gans somewhat for the, you know, general crumbling of like the world, just general, the state of the world. I think that's probably his fault in some part. I haven't pinpointed exactly what like role he played in it, but he's there. Trust me.
Could not disagree more. Ridiculous thing to say. The man is obviously putting out the best work of his life. He's going beast mode.
Despite the allegations.
How dare you? How dare you even imply that? Have you even seen Crying Free Man? I mean, you're talking out of your ass, dog.
I can't hear this shit.
If you're going to talk this shit, I don't even want to hear it.
Okay, so are you going to sit here and tell me that you're a Return to Silent Hill 2 defender?
Yes. Absolutely. Oh, 100%. God. Yes, I am.
Okay, all right. All right, let's talk this out. In a fair and reasonable fashion. I did not enjoy this movie.
Let's establish this first. Did you see La Belle et la Bête, his remake of the classic Jean Cocteau movie?
No, I did not.
Okay, so you're a fake fan. So fake gamer girl right off the bat. So okay, yeah, let's hear your opinion about the movie.
I'm just okay.
Go ahead.
I will. Thank you for letting me talk on my platform. So I want to say up front, I did not enjoy the movie. That does not mean there are things that I did not enjoy about it. So first off, both Silent Hill movies, love the soundtrack. Cool stuff. I thought the soundtrack was cool.
Well, yeah, Akira Yamaoka did the soundtrack.
Yep. Did they do the soundtrack in the first movie as well? or just this one?
I don't remember. Maybe.
Because the first movie has that really awesome, like, house beat breakdown remix of the Silent Hill theme.
Yeah.
Man, that when they start playing that over the credits, that really goes hard. Which, again, probably one of the better things about the first movie. This movie, I liked the soundtrack. I liked... there were many visuals that I think were very silly, but I liked them anyway. You know, just there's some imagery in there that I found very striking, very memorable, even if upon like the barest amount of analysis, it is like just the stupidest, silliest thing ever. Specifically, the shot of James painting the pyramid over his own head. In his
yeah, it's
flashback,
one of the funniest
flash
things
forward
in the whole movie. That shit
I'm
rocks.
Like, oh, that's
so
cool imagery.
Funny.
I can't believe that it's being used for something this dumb.
It's very funny.
Yeah. So I'm just gonna back up and let's break down some of the wild changes that Christoph Gans made to this story, like as his adaptation of Silent Hill 2. And you can tell me how you feel about them.
Sure. Well, there's a few things to mention. One, it reminds me, now who knows if this is true? I'm leaning on not true, but there was a rumor at the time when the first movie was released that there was a secret Canadian cut of
what?
Silent Hill 1. Yes, I don't. You never heard this?
No.
I don't know if it was true. I think it was maybe just a rumor, but the idea was that you know, Christoph Gans, big fan of the games, wanted to include a lot more stuff that was from the games themselves, and made some really hardcore decisions that according to the rumors were only released in the Canadian version. So a lot, this is maybe some cope from the fans that like, oh, the version they released was not his true vision, right? And I feel like we're going to get a lot of that coming out of this movie as well, because there were some very big additions to the idea of Silent Hill, some big swings that were not part of the original vision, let's say, that, again, seem to be, and I, you know, maybe this is people talking to their ass, maybe not, were hoisted upon the movie by people who did not want them to release a faithful Silent Hill movie.
Well, conspiracy-minded thinking is just going around in general. I think that we need to get ahead of this, and I personally believe that the movie that we got is Christoph Gans' like definitive vision for what he wanted Silent Hill 2 to be. I don't think there's anything to indicate that he was manipulated into putting out this version.
I do not believe that. I believe this is a compromise vision, and I say that because this is not a Sony release.
Hmm.
You know, he would have been working on this for many, many years. There was lots and lots of setbacks. One being the original screenwriter. He killed someone in a DUI incident and went to jail.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, that was kind of, I think, a pretty big setback during the original vision. Christoph Gans had a really hard time funding this movie and then trying to get Sony back on board after the first one. Actually, after Revelations was so terrible and tanked really hard.
Okay, here's,
Sony got cold feet off that.
Uh-huh. Listeners, here is a little trick that you can do when you're watching a movie to see, like, to gauge how much trouble it had getting like made. And the more production house names they flash during the opening credits, probably the more of a giant headache for everyone involved it was to actually create this movie. And I can tell that this movie had significant issues in pre-production and production because they flashed like 25 different producer credits before they even had shot one. And this was all white text over a black background. They didn't even do an intro animatic for these credits. something went wrong here.
Oh, yeah. And there's going to be a lot of people going out and saying that Christoph Gans doesn't understand Silent Hill. And I just want to say, a lot of people don't understand Silent Hill and are still huge fucking fans. I don't think Christoph Gans had a problem interpreting Silent Hill. I think what happened is he tried to make a movie, a deeply compromised movie, and I pointed this out at the time, for less than half of what the first movie cost by a completely amateurish studio who are just on the upswing because of a completely surprise hit out of Terrifier series, right?
Okay.
Recently brought us the remake of Silent Night, Deadly Night.
I mean, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of those movies, but people seem to like them. So I'm not going to hold a success against a studio, let's say. But I did
I'm
not
just
know.
Saying,
I did
this
not
is,
know that it was
this
that.
Is,
it was those
yes,
guys.
This is a very particular thing here. And I don't think that probably helped a lot. And again, this was, original Silent Hill had actual Sony Pictures backing, had I read a $60 million budget, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was in 2006. Now it's in 2026. This movie had about $20 million budget, $23 million budget in 2026 dollars, American dollars,
yeah.
Which we all know is not good. And still made a movie that looked like a movie. So First good thing I have to say about it. It looked like a real movie with a real budget when it did not have a real budget or a real studio behind it.
Sure. You know what? Visually, I think it looked like a real place in a few shots. I think that it looked like maybe a heavy use of digital composite imagery for many, many like mundane looking shots. Like, why did they put in a very obvious CGI like background, like lakescape in the hotel window shot? Like, you don't need to do that. You don't need to call attention to it.
You just want them to have the blinds closed.
You know,
that would be your solution.
I'm just saying, like, you could do it anyway. You could have a do that old style of filmmaking where they put like a backlit sheet in front of the windows to just kind of give like an impressionistic aura of eerie light coming out, like a old German film or something. I don't know. I'm not a filmmaker. I'm just saying I noticed it in a place where I didn't want to notice it, or that shot when he's at the rest stop, looking out over the lake at the town. They could have done, I know that they were working on a lower budget, but they could have done a little bit better.
I think this is, again, kind of one of these studio note type things. Like, we need to constantly remind the audience, who are probably be on their phones.
Sure.
Which is the kind of prevailing wisdom of Hollywood at the moment, is, viewers, they be on their phones.
Mm-hmm. Everything has to be a second screen experience now.
From what I know of watching movies with many people these days, they do be on their phones. Not pointing fingers, but, they do. It's true. Maybe not so much in the theaters. I don't go to movies with people who are that rude, really, but it happens. You know it's happening out there.
Yeah.
So I think constantly reestablishing where we are in space is something that is kind of mandated these days. So I don't necessarily blame them for constantly being like, here's where our characters are, just to make sure. Do you understand? This is where they are.
Okay, but all right, then let's look then a little bit more closely at some of the changes that were imposed on the character of James. Now, the James that I remember from the video game is, to credit, not as much of a character as more of just like a vehicle that you drive around this creepy town. Anything that I remember that was like could be considered narrative or characterization surrounding James happened in like the first 10 minutes and the last 20 minutes of that game. Everything else is him like wandering from creepy location to creepy location and being like, wow, that's weird. I've got to get out of here. And then you fight like a weird looking like boss that's kind of gives like psychosexual deviant like vibes. And then you move on to the next location. And then in the last, you know, cutscene, spoilers, I guess, you get one of the endings where you find out James kills his wife. So fair enough. That's not a lot to go on when you're trying to craft a film narrative, which, you know, you need characters for, and you need them to have like agency and motivation and like something for the audience to latch on to. But why then? Why make the decision to make James in this movie a like a Playboy alcoholic artist who's very sad about his not dead wife, his dead kind of girlfriend. His words exactly.
Not kind of.
No,
not
his words exactly. Of. He said, she's kind of my girlfriend.
Yeah, but he's being weird James. It was definitely his girlfriend. I think because the last time he saw her, they had been fighting. I think this goes back to some of the screenwriting choices. You know, this was co-written by the guy who wrote The Crow from a couple years ago, you know?
I think we can learn a little bit.
Yeah, the Billy Skarsgård one. I think we can learn a little bit about where they're coming from the approach to that character, who in that movie, you'll remember, he starts off as a guy who has been 5150'd and been living in a psych ward for a long time.
I didn't actually see that one.
Oh, you got to see it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Billy Skarsgård? Zoe Kravitz? Come on.
I don't know. You know, the original Crow is just so near and dear to my heart. I don't think that I could see it done dirty like that.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of affection for The Crow. I did mean to see that
Billy Skarsgård Crow movie. I just never got around to it. I probably will eventually.
Yeah. It's funny. It's funny that he did that. He's got a fucking katana in that movie. It's funny. But yeah, I mean, it's the same. It's a bit of a same approach where you need to recontextualize your main character because now he is like a person with agency. Mm-hmm. In video games, your protagonist does not have agency. You tell him what to do.
Right.
You tell him to shoot the people that you want to shoot with the gun.
Well, okay, but here's the thing. When a character doesn't have agency like that, you know, video games are a really perfect medium for exploring this aspect, specifically because the characters don't have agency outside of what the player tells them to do, usually. And so what that gave us in the original Silent Hill 2 was this weird, ethereal, like, nightmare dreamscape reminiscent of, like, the Lost Souls from the Carnival of Lost Souls, basically.
Where, yeah, like that carnival.
Like that carnival. What has the lost
that
souls?
That carnival
in
that one time that had the lost souls, yeah.
And you have like this cast of characters that, you know, popular interpretation is that all of these people that James meets throughout the story are all also having their own like trauma kind of wrung out and played against them in their own versions of Silent Hill, which is why they have these weird kind of disjointed, anachronistic conversations where it's not really clear when and where you're actually interacting with these people.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think a popular interpretation, at least the one that I've always thought of is, you know, this is a very classic Greek tragedy where he's going into the underworld. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say it's the Orpheus and Eurydice story, which I agree with.
Yeah, I can see that.
And these are the shades of the damned that Greek heroes often run into. Also reinterpreting through, like, you know, Virgil, right? Mm-hmm. Dante's Inferno. This is exactly what happens in those books. He wanders through these planes of the damned and comes across these characters who give them their weird little disjointed speeches about being punished for crimes and what suffering is in hell and all that. It's kind of a combination of those two things.
Mm-hmm.
But in the games, that doesn't affect James, like, at all. He still kind of just wanders from place to place, solving puzzles and shooting things in the head.
Yeah.
He does not really do anything about it. It's very, very unclear if anything strikes him as odd at all. Unless he looks at a thing and goes, that's weird.
Yeah. Huh, that's strange. Hey, a big hole. Should I jump in it?
The biggest possible. And I know, you know, he drives a Mustang. He smokes weed. He's like, yeah, okay, well, kind we didn't, of a nervous
we, I was going to touch on that. They make James strike up a fatty bum batty while driving on a twisty mountain road. First thing, first image.
He sparks a picture perfect joint.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the movie. It's
and
true.
He's wearing cool guy shades and a blazer.
Yeah, I think what it is, you know, we suddenly in a movie, you need a character. And I get that lots of people, this is not their interpretive of James. I understand that. This is probably not how I would have written the character either. But I understand why they did it like that. I think the only problem I have with their characterization of James is that he's rushing everywhere. I know in the game, nobody has the patience to walk, so you are just running constantly through Silent Hill. But in the movie, you do have the ability to slow down and have James kind of like take his time. But instead, in the movie, he's kind of like he's in a hurry for some reason.
Well, that actually ties into another criticism I had of his character in this movie, in that they made him kind of he got protagonitis. He got turned into a semi-action star. Like, there is one scene where he literally kung fu fights off an entire room of Silent Hill nurses. Like, he's doing like kicks and hitting them with a bat and stuff. I do not remember having to fight 20 nurses at once in Silent Hill 2. And then one nurse, while he's fighting off the horde of them, gets through and stabs Maria. And he like looks back and gives like this totally like annoyed, like, "Ugh, I can't believe you let that happen." Look at her. Is very
well,
funny.
It is annoying. We all know that when you're playing an escort mission, it's really fucking annoying when an enemy gets behind you and stabs your escort.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We've all played Resident Evil 4. We know how fucking annoying this is.
Well, I mean, if they had leaned into like the artifice of it being based off of a video game more, like really leaned into it, I think that would have been at the very least funny, if not interesting, like in its own right. But they didn't do that. They just kind of like made him a punchy movie protagonist guy, because you have to remember they established that James has a violent side in the beginning of the movie when they show him get into a bar fist fight because he's sad about his dead girlfriend, kind of.
Yeah, he does do that.
I'm just saying these are all wild departations from the video game character. And what I was trying to get at with him
I don't think it's fair to say that James is not violent when you play 10 hours of him literally shooting and stabbing and fucking hitting shit with pipes. James is extraordinarily violent in the games. Let's not say that shit.
To be fair, that gives away my particular play style for Silent Hill. I always turn the combat way down and turn the puzzles up. That is how I played those games.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, James still does pick up a gun, load it up, and start blasting, even if you choose not to do
that.
Yeah,
but he's American. He just knows how to do that. It comes naturally to him.
Sure, sure. I mean, he is, like I said, he is a veteran of the Gulf War who has extreme PTSD.
Okay.
We know he has combat training.
Moving on from specifically James, the other big thing, which I think is probably going to be the more constant talking point amongst people criticizing this movie, is the shoehorning in of the cult aspect from Silent Hill 1.
Sure.
You know, in the game, there was no cult inference outside of like a couple very missable, like journal entry type things, you know, set dressing stuff. And in this movie, they decided to explicitly tie in the cult of Silent Hill, which was a West Virginia mining town in the first movie and is explicitly not that anymore in this. So I think that we can probably rule out entirely that this is supposed to be a direct, like, literal sequel to Christoph Gans' Silent Hill 1, which would fit into the theme that Silent Hill 2, the game, was setting up, which is that Silent Hill 2 is not, like, a specific place. It is, it's hell. It's the underworld.
Yeah, it was supposed to be, like, an anthology.
Yeah. Now we are in a Silent Hill 2 that is explicitly not tied to the other Silent Hill movie version, but also still has its own cult set up around it, which I think is just incredibly very, very funny change to make, because it makes no sense to just have them here doing stuff. So we have Mary, James's dead girlfriend, kind of, and her father was the leader of the cult, and the cult poisons Mary and then, like, drinks her blood or something. Is that what they were doing?
I guess so. I wasn't really sure.
Yeah.
Maybe they were licking her poisoned sweat.
Yeah. And so
it's like one of the cool things where, like, the body has to, like, process a poison and it turns into, like, a euphoric drug or something.
Oh, you mean like those toads?
Yeah. I mean, that's sick as hell if you think about it.
They were licking her to get high like an Amazonian toad.
Yeah. I found that to be essentially this is an intent to deepen Mary's relationship with the plot by kind of reframing her as like a Rosemary's Baby kind of thing.
Uh-huh. Which, yeah, I picked up on that, like, kind of general vibe reference when they were doing it. But they didn't do it enough for it to be like an explicit Rosemary's Baby reference. I think they were just kind of leaning into the, yeah, cult doing something weird to a lady.
Yeah, to a lady.
Yeah, to a lady.
To a lady.
And then
rude. It's a rude thing to do to a lady.
You shouldn't do that to ladies.
You shouldn't do cult stuff to ladies. It's rude.
It's very disrespectful. I guess I'm just confused on what the general plan was, because she was dying because the cult was poisoning her so that they could lick her to get high. And that is why she wanted James to kill her, which is another, probably the biggest change in this narrative. But coming back to that, and then, like, yeah, is that it? Were they killing her? Or were they trying to just, like, consume her? I don't know what the cult's goal was here, other than being, like, creepy and doing creepy stuff to a lady. I couldn't figure that out.
It's a big missing piece. We have big missing pieces, and I think this is the this is directly related to the only two problems I see in the entire movie. And I think the two problems are all, everything I don't like about this movie is script related. I think the script is not unfixable, not unrecoverable, but I think has severe problems. One being that there are huge missing pieces. We introduce a bunch of elements that we don't have time to deepen or resolve. The cult being probably one of the biggest ones. Mm-hmm. I get why it's there. I see the utility of it. I don't have a problem with it existing. But without a second or third follow-up, we don't understand why we know about it. The only pieces that truly, truly throw everything out of whack are the non-Silent Hilly pieces. The psychiatrist, right?
Uh-huh.
Who intrudes into Silent Hill, just like she's intruding into the movie for no reason. Not no reason. Again, I understand the utility, which is we're trying to explain to the stupid, dumb, idiot audience who are on their phones that, like, something psychological is happening to James. Like, I get it. I know why they did this. But it has nothing to do with the games, and it takes up a massive amount of time that we needed for all these other pieces to fit together, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that is the single biggest problem in this movie is all the psychiatrist stuff. Does not need to be in there. In fact, ruins a lot of the other parts of the plot. And ruins the amount of time we have to do other stuff.
Yeah.
Because, again, $23 million budget has to be an hour and a half. You do not have enough money to shoot more. And the second scripting problem, and, again, $23 million budget, don't have time to shoot more than an hour and a half, right? So you need to make this work in the script, is that James rushes everywhere. Mm-hmm. We have a severe pacing problem because as the psychiatry stuff elbows out the ability to ruminate on scenes, we necessarily have to shoot all the scenes in a hurry. And that's why James feels manic in the movie, is because he is rushing everywhere, because he has to rush, because we've only got an hour of Silent Hill in this movie and he needs to get all the way through it. It's like a speedrunner. You ever watch somebody speedrun the game?
Yeah.
It fucking sucks.
You know, we're not just losing, like, James in all of this, like, his character. Like, they introduce Eddie for one scene and then he is gone from the movie. He is just gone.
Well, this is what I'm saying. Since we have very little time and the psychiatry stuff intrudes in here, I really think what it elbowed out was a follow-up scene with the cult stuff in order to establish why it exists in the first place. Mm-hmm. We lose the ability to follow up with Eddie to establish what happens to him. Which we don't need a lot of. I like that Eddie comes into the story very quickly, is a jerk, and then runs away. I like that. I think that's fine. It's funny to me. But what we need is a capper on him later on to justify his appearance.
Yes.
And we need a capper on Angela as well, right?
We got a capper on Angela, mind you.
Yeah, but we don't have... We don't have enough time to make it fit clockwork style into the plot, right? So she feels like an element, like many of the elements of the movie, where we just kind of hurry through, right?
Well, okay.
This is every character, including James, is we are missing pieces that needed to be included in order for this thing to come together.
Okay, one of the big reveals that we get at the end of the movie that I laughed at was when they do the pan down to Mary's gravestone and it reads her full name, which is just the names of all of the other female characters in the movie.
Which is so funny. So I laughed incredibly hard.
And I think
I laughed through the last 5 minutes of this movie incredibly hard.
And I think they did that in part from what you're saying is like, all right, we have no way to satisfyingly like end all of these characters' narratives in this movie. We've introduced them and like they did what they were supposed to do in that scene, but like, we have no way for them to impact the overall ending. And I think that was their attempt to just kind of, like, hand wave it away and have the audience, like, infer some kind of resolution from seeing that. You know, it's like you're wondering, oh, what happened to Angela? What happened to the what happened to that character? And then you see
who were these people?
And then you see her name on the gravestone and you go, oh, well, I guess she was just an aspect of Mary all along. And so,
yeah,
like, it doesn't matter what happened to her after the scene. You know, it's backfilling in justification for those scenes.
Yeah, exactly. It's just going, well, here is a resolution so you don't have to think about it.
Okay, so we've been talking about this for a while, so I want to get to the big thing, the big change, which is James's motivation for killing Mary. In the game, through several endings, you discover that James, through a combination of like resentment and guilt and just kind of being a generally shitty dude, he kills his cancer-stricken wife so that he wouldn't have to like take care of her anymore, basically. And depending on which ending you get, this either paints James as like an absolute psychopath or like charitably a very shitty husband. In the movie, they've now changed it to have Mary asking James explicitly to put her out of her misery because she was so, because the cult was doing rude things to her, basically.
Yeah.
And it's like a whole, and wrapping her up with Angela as a character, like, makes that even more, like, the implications there makes it even more weird. I don't know if they were even thinking about that when they were writing the script. But yeah, now we have James, who is guilty. He's guilty because his wife was like being poisoned.
Well, let's say legally culpable.
Legally culpable. she asked him to do that, put her out of her misery instead of like, hey, why don't you seem like a guy who can kill an entire room full of people? Why don't you just kill this cult that's been poisoning me? Yeah, did they even think of that? Huh? Did they even think of that, Remy? Why didn't he just kill the cult?
Why not? You know what? Why not? That would have been cool. I would have taken that over the psychiatry stuff for sure. If he went sicko mode and just murdered the fuck out of a bunch.
Well, but then, we even got the perfect setup for it. We even got the perfect setup for it because, again, after we get the reveal now that James killed his girlfriend, kind of, he has the confrontation with the giant bug version of her that he merges with, and then that sends him back in time. We've now done a time loop, and it sends us back to the beginning of the movie where he's striking up a fat blunt while driving down the road, listening to rock and or roll. And this time,
death restart.
Yeah, restart.
Pretty
and this
sick.
Time, when he has his meet cute with Mary, and she's like, do you want to go to this town, Silent Hill? And he's like, nah, fuck that, babe. Let's get
fuck
the hell out of here.
Let's get the fuck out of here. Fuck Silent Hill.
And that's the end of the movie, which is like, still pretty funny. It's not him busting in and like going full They Live on a room full of creepy cult people, but
yeah, which would be funnier.
It was still a pretty funny way to end that, and then to go into like a hard rock version of the Silent Hill theme from the beginning of the movie. Like, what are we doing here? What is going on?
It's cool. I have no problem with that because that is a video game thing. I mean, in a different execution, we can be like, yeah, that's what happens when somebody restarts the game because they want a different ending, right?
Okay, sure.
It's just that, you know, that's a reading that is available to us. I'm not saying that was their intention or whatever, or even that you need to interpret it that way. I'm just saying there is a reading there that is the classic video game one.
Uh-huh.
In the game, they explicitly never allow you to turn around and leave Silent Hill. In fact, there is an achievement you can get for trying to do that. But, you know, in a movie, it's like, whatever. Yeah, sure. You restart. You go, hey, actually, it would be better if we don't go there.
Let's just get out of here.
That is, again, not a thing I would have a problem with at all. And you would have to excise all of the psychiatry stuff to make room for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really think that is the biggest problem with this movie. I do want to say, I think there are a bunch of shots that he recreates from the game that look, and I hope this pisses you off, all of you listeners. He recreates scenes from the game that look better than the game. Every single version of it. The remake, the original, the PC Advanced Edition or whatever. They look more true to what the game looks like in people's imaginations than the game actually looks like. I think he fucking hits it so far out of the park when everything lines up perfectly that, like, I will defend this fucking movie. Like, those scenes are enough for me to be like, there is something valuable in this.
I feel like maybe I started off too strong. I did not enjoy this movie as a Silent Hill movie. Like I said, and I want to reiterate, there was a lot of stuff that I did enjoy. And I think the ending was stupid, but I did enjoy it in kind of like a what is going on here kind of vibe, like sense, you know?
Yeah.
Like there was some genuinely entertaining like stuff in here. I was entertained for sure.
Oh yeah.
I
enjoyed watching this movie, and I've watched a lot of movies that I was fucking suffering through, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's
not just bored, but like literally like I need to stop. I can't, why am I doing this to myself? And yeah. This movie was a breeze to make through. It was the perfect amount of time. It had plenty of funny shit to laugh at. It had a bunch of cool stuff to look at. Like, ultimately, if you want a bad movie, this is the platonic ideal of a bad movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I will give it to you. This is the platonic ideal of a bad movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I will absolutely watch this again. Maybe even a third time, you know?
Oh, you know, I'm going to place this up there with, like, the 90s Mortal Kombat movie.
Oh.
I'm going to place this up there with the 90s Mortal Kombat movie and like Carl Urban's Dune.
Oh, I was going to say, are you thinking of the Fist of the North Star movie?
I will put it up there as well with the Fist of the North Star movie. Starring
fucking rock. Oh, that shit kicks ass. Yeah. Malcolm McDowell.
Yeah, is hell yeah.
Reaching for. Yeah. And the guy from Saw with the insane name.
It's a great cast. Great cast.
Yeah.
Remember when that guy's head explodes? And it looks like a meaty grenade. I love that. It looks like the scene from Scanners.
That shit rules so fucking hard.
Starring Clint Howard, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. see, if you have time, this is how time heals wounds, right? If you have time and distance from, like, Fist of the North Star, you can watch that movie, which is an absolute mess, is completely ridiculous, does not respect the source material in any way, it has no budget at all, but fucking rules. And like, that is the kind of thing that you can do when you have distance from something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this rules as hard as that, but I do think, like, in time, I think there is a position we could take eventually where we can watch this movie with different eyes and like it a lot.
I'm going to come back in like a couple years and rewatch this after I've replayed the game and maybe like when I've played the remake and see and just like give it another shot.
Yeah. I genuinely mean that is the thing. Like I said, I think this script is a mess. I would love to take a crack at writing my own fucking Silent Hill 2 script. I think I would do a great job.
Uh-huh.
I think I would kill that so hard. But I would not be able, I genuinely don't think I would want to change the way this was shot and lit, right? I think that actually was perfect. I appreciate that.
The cinematography was not my issue with the movie.
I think they did a great job, like, lighting it, color grading it, shooting it. I think having actors portray the monsters with, like, practical effects was absolutely always the right call. I think they looked great. They moved great. Unfortunately, like I've said before, the makeup on the burn makeup on Mary in a couple of the scenes was not super great. Looked a little rubbery.
I mean, it looked on par with the burn makeup from the first movie.
Yes, Alyssa's burn makeup in the first movie is also my least favorite effect in that movie. which is a movie that's also filled with a bunch of really great practical and CG effects that I really like. In fact, one of the things I was really missing in this movie is I think the original Silent Hill, like, transition to hell thing where everything melts and burns up into ash is so good that I would have appreciated if he had used it in this movie again.
Sure.
But it does not. Everything is sort of a sickly matrixy green,
which, you know, if you're gonna crib a color palette, like, you can do worse than the Matrix, I suppose.
Yeah, and also he really leans into it in a good way.
Gives it a very like early 2000s nostalgia feel.
It does. And it, again, that's one of the things where I think people, like, in their imaginations of Silent Hill 2, make that game more green than it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really more of a blue-gray in my mind.
In the game itself, it is kind of a washed-out pale.
Mm-hmm.
But I think because people remember that first scene of James with his green coat and everything, I think sometimes people imagine it as with a more daring color palette throughout. And I think that's why he chose to do that in this movie. And I think it works. Honestly, I would love to have a green filter that I could put over the game to make it look more like this movie.
I mean, you could probably do that if you're playing it with an emulator.
Oh, I could put all kinds of filters. I could do whatever I want.
Yeah, I could do whatever I want.
I could do what I want. In fact, I'm playing Silent Hill 2, the original, in first-person mode right now, which I think is incredibly funny.
That's got to
really
be weird.
Really recontextualizes a lot of things.
Oh, man. Okay, we just talked a really long time about Return to Silent Hill.
Yep. I like this. I will clearly like this movie a lot more than pretty much anybody else who sees it.
That is almost assured. I can guarantee that. I would say,
and I want to say again, I am not being contrarian here. I these are my genuine feelings.
Well, more power to you. I would say definitely go see this movie just to see it. I can't. I don't have anything more that I can say in defense or against this movie. So, you know, if you liked it, then that is your prerogative. I am not here to talk you out of it.
Go see this shit. So we at least get like an alternate cut for Blu-ray or whatever.
Oh, man, where are the chuds going to come out of the woodwork for the Gans cut of
Gans cut?
Release the Gans cut. Silent Hill. Return to Silent Hill.
I cannot wait until, again, we have some more distance on here so I can hear about the production of this movie. I am desperately curious.
In 10 years, you're going to hear people start saying online, like, hey, you know, this was actually like a really good movie, actually, just like they are for the first Silent Hill movie. And that, you know what? I saw people saying that. I saw people saying that surrounding the release of this. And that's why I went back and watched 2006 Silent Hill again. And you know what? It's still not that great of a movie. It's better than this one.
Oh, I think it's great. No, I will also defend that first one. I think that movie kicks ass. That shit fucking rules.
Oh, man. Okay.
When I saw that shit opening night in theaters in 2006. And let me tell you, people did not leave that movie disappointed. People came out of that shit fucking shell-shocked, dog. That shit ruled. It hit so hard.
All right. There's one other thing that I wanted to talk about a little bit before we wrap it up for today. And we've talked about Silent Hill so much that I'm going to try and keep this short. But I did watch something else. I watched another movie, and I really want to talk about it. I watched Masaaki Yuasa's Studio Saintsaru, The Tale of Inuo, last night.
Yes, absolutely legendary.
Oh, my God. This blew my mind, and I don't know why I was like didn't think it would, why I would like not assume that it wouldn't, because every other Saintsaru Yuasa work that I've seen is just, you know, the stuff of a fucking master. Like, it's crazy. This one, I believe, came out a couple years ago, maybe like 2 or 3 years ago. I just happened to be in a bookstore, and they had it in the used Blu-ray section, so I picked it up because it was, it'd been on my list for a while to watch. And this blew me away last night. Tale of Inuo, in very quick summary, is a very glam rock inspired rock opera retelling of the Heike stories, which is kind of like a piece of Japanese historical poetry from the Warring States period about the North and South empirical factions fighting each other for, you know, to see who would become shogun. And yep. And it's kind of like this, I don't even know how to describe it. You know, the literal story is centered around two characters. One is a blind shamisen player, and the other is what starts off as like this. I mean, he is a child, he's a person, but he was born cursed to have like this freaky, like grotesque, like goblin body, basically. He's got like a long arm and scales on his back. And they meet up and discover that together they do basically it's the same story as Tenacious D and the Pick of Destiny, if you think about it. They're basically the same thing. It's about two loners coming together and forming the rockinest group that the world has ever seen for that time. Inuo, the title character, is like this weird little goblin guy, and he loves dancing, and he meets up with this blind shamisen player, and together they confer with the spirits to tell the hidden stories of all the soldiers that died during this big battle. And each time they put on a big show and kind of like give this like increase the awareness and reverence to these spirits from the people, from their audience, it kind of turns Inuo into a more like complete person, is what it's coming off as. Like, he becomes less deformed and he becomes like a super handsome hot guy by the end of the movie. And it's just filled with these amazing
the power of rock and roll.
I know power. That is, I mean, that is the theme of the movie right there. Is that the rock and roll is the power of like movement and social upheaval and change. Like, the rock and roll is the spirit of the people, basically, and it is how, you know, it is how you define yourself. And it's just got these amazing, like, beautifully animated, like rock opera kind of like dance and song sequences where they're retelling these historical stories in the form of like these like bluesy heavy rock ballads, and there's colors and lights, and it's just, it's freaking amazing. It's just, it's really cool to look at. I was really blown away by this one. You've seen it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course I've seen it. You mm-hmm. know I'm a Masaaki Yuasa super fan.
Big time.
I'm all over this dude. And, you know, I'm a fan of musicals as well, which in anime we don't get too many of, honestly. We've been seeing a few more. Generally in anime we get the, like, forming a band story. That tends to be a lot of musical anime.
Yes. And the music is always glossed over. You know,
not always, you know, in like, I think Carol and Tuesday is probably my favorite version of the forming a band anime. Uh-huh. You know, my feeling about like Beck or Given,
sure.
You know, which I think are not as good as some people say.
I like Beck.
But in Carol and Tuesday. Yeah, I know you do. But Carol and Tuesday, I think, is really great. Carol and Tuesday, the unofficial sequel to Cowboy Bebop. If people don't remember,
yep,
is a fucking truly, truly great. It's kind of old now. A Studio Bones show about two girls forming a band on Mars. It just is really fantastic, and I think the music is pretty central in that show.
Yeah,
and the music itself is pretty fucking good.
Well, I feel
it's still forming a band anime.
The big thing is that I feel like to make it a musical, like the music has to be incorporated into the storytelling, you know.
Yes.
Whereas in all of these, like, let's form a band, girl anime and manga, the music is very much like, all right, they're up on stage, and then you just kind of get the general, like, background music version of whatever they're playing.
Yes.
Like, you'll notice that every time that the band is playing a song, instead of the camera focusing on them playing, it'll always cut to, like, what other characters are talking about while the band is on stage, so that they don't actually have to show the music.
There are some that do a better job at this, not necessarily like including really folding in the musical acts as part of the narrative, but mm-hmm. they do a better job at using the music as expressions, as focal points in the story. You know, I think Agretzko does a good job of this.
Sure.
Where,
yeah.
You know, the episodes break down when she goes to express herself by doing the death metal covers.
Mm-hmm.
I think Blue Giant, which I haven't watched a lot of, but the main character of that the story kind of builds into these scenes where he plays jazz, right? He's a saxophonist, so the story kind of breaks down when he has big musical inspiration moments.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess people would, they've said this about like K-On or whatever, but I can't stand shit like that. You know, I don't really like a lot of the idol anime, but I think sometimes they do a good job of that. Well, I think it's rarer when saying, the music is the actual narrative itself.
That's what I'm saying, is it's much rarer when the music is part of the diegesis of the film, as opposed to something that you cut away to, or something that is just kind of played over the narrative. So we don't get a lot of that, but they do that. They do that really well. And they do this thing where they interweave the narrator and one of the main characters, the shamisen player, you know, are the same character. It's revealed at the end of the movie. The narrator is the 600-year-old spirit version of this guy that we've been following through the movie.
Yeah.
And they do this interweaving of the narrator singing over this character playing the shamisen in the present tense of the film narrative. And I thought that was really cool to then back out and show that it's been the narrator singing from the present the whole time.
Yes, which is dope as hell. And yeah. I think, honestly, like one of the only times at this, obviously this strays more into just doing music videos, which... You know, I don't know if the separation has to be super hard, but that's what Interstellar 5555 does.
Yes, right? That's another one.
It constantly blends it obscures the line between what is diegetic and non-diegetic in the movie, because the band is sometimes playing the actual music you're hearing and sometimes not, and the songs are telling the story of what's happening to the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes not, you know, not just because I'm a huge Daft Punk fan, but I think that's like one of the bedrocks of like anime musicals, is it comes the closest, along with Inua, I think, to being like a classic like musical anime.
Yeah. Yes.
Whereas a lot of them are either a band story, like the recently released Cosmic Princess Kaguya, or a music video, like, you know, the Porter Robinson Shelter video that I showed you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a musical narrative, but is very much a music video.
Mm-hmm.
Or like the other one I sent you, which you had inexplicably not seen, the very famous Daoko Teddy Lloyd Me 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 video.
I had not seen it. I have now.
Yeah. Yeah, which, like I had said, is one of the most important anime music videos ever made. Up there with, I don't know if you ever saw this one, but Koji Morimoto made a music video for Gurei a while back.
Gurei.
That was very, very influential. That's another one that was very much worth watching. It rocks.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess what I wanted to talk to you most about before we wrap it up for this week is I am like, I'm not sure how I felt about the ending of Inuo, which felt, I mean, the biggest impression is that it felt very anticlimactic to me, because the narrative that the film builds up is we have Inuo telling the stories of these fallen soldier spirits that have cursed him, but also kind of like give him basically the power of showmanship. Like, this dude fucking rocks. He knows how to put on a show. Like, he's peak performance. And so every time, you know, we have these story beats of he'll tell a new story to the people and that'll get everybody hyped up. And then another part of his body will kind of become uncursed, you know, until finally he looks like a regular person.
It's kind of a loaded term, but okay.
Please, listeners, I did not mean it that way. I'm just, if you saw the movie, you know what I was talking about.
A beautiful man.
Well, he does become a beautiful man.
You know, a normal person. A normal, beautiful man person.
And the kind of like climactic confrontation at the end of the movie is that all of these shows, his presence, like his influence on the masses, is making the political elite uncomfortable, and the emperor calls him in and says, hey, you can't do your act anymore. Like, we have this officially mandated official version of the Heike stories, and you're only allowed to tell those from now on. And if you do your rockin'est stuff anymore, then we're gonna cut off your head. Which is where we have a split between the two characters. Our blind shamisen player says, like, nah, fuck that. I'm gonna keep rocking out until the day I die. In which he does, because they cut off his head.
Hell yeah.
And then you have Inuo, who at this point has become like a traditionally like beautiful man, and he's famous. Yep. And he's got groupies, and everybody loves him, and he capitulates. You know, he's like, obviously he's pissed off about it, but he basically sells out, right? And that's what he does. He takes the record deal and he leaves his band behind. And then that is essentially the end of the movie, except we get a very quick cut forward 600 years where it's revealed that the spirit of the shamisen player has been the narrator the whole time. And out of nowhere, the Inuo's spirit shows up and is just like, hey, we cool? Like, I know it's been 600 years, but we're cool, right? And they're like, yeah, we're cool. And then the movie ends.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm not sure what the message they were trying to convey with that is. Is it that fame and remembrance and like legacy don't really matter in the long run because they were both forgotten? Because, I mean, we get a flashcard at the end saying like, yep, 600 years passed and everybody forgot everything about both of these guys.
No one cared.
No one cared.
Yeah. Transience.
Yeah. Just, and you know, and then we end on a shot of their spirits, you know, rocking out in the spirit world, and then cut to credits.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
Which, you know, is nice, but it's just, it feels like you set up this conflict, this split between the two characters at the very end of the movie, and then you say, all right, time skip, and they got over it in that time. We're all cool now.
Yeah. Well, you know, forgiveness is itself
a virtue,
a spiritually healthy thing. You know, it's a virtue. Yeah, sure, it's a virtue. It's something that you can find no matter, you know, what occurs, especially if 600 years transpire.
Well, yeah, but okay, I understand that, but it feels like if that's the message, then that's the kind of thing you construct an entire theme around, not just something that you say happened at the end of the movie when the other narrative that you constructed already resolved itself.
I think perhaps you can look at it through the lens of like, no matter what happens, fucking jamming is the most important thing in the world. Just jamming.
Like, shit, yeah. Yeah.
Like, jamming is the most important thing in the movie. It's the most important thing in the afterlife. Just jamming.
I mean, the final dialogue in this movie, what we leave off on is, you know, they're the two spirits, and they say, hey, you play that thing pretty good. And he goes, yeah. Hell yeah, I do.
Hell yeah, bro.
And then they jam out.
Jamming.
So yeah, that was Tale of Inuo, Masaaki Yuasa, Science Saru, from, I want to say, like 2023, maybe 2022. Go watch it as soon as you can, because it is just an absolute treat for the eyeballs.
Yeah, it's one of the good ones.
It's canonically one of the good ones.
We get one of the good ones every once in a while. A lot of them happen to be whatever Masaaki Yuasa's working on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a pretty high batting average, not going to lie.
Yeah, no shit, dog. You gotta watch Kick Heart.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's so good. You know, when he takes a swing, it's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Still got fucking Chow on the deck. I really think that one's going to on be that fucking one, yeah. Fantastic. I just got to get the fucking... I got to find those subtitles somewhere.
Or just learn how to speak Japanese, bro.
Yeah. What's the last truly great one, though? Maybe Walk on Girl, The Night is Long? Maybe the last truly great anime movie that's
like,
come
truly,
out?
Like, truly, truly great? I think so. Like, for me, at least. And that was 2017. Yeah.
Look Back was really good.
Look Back was really good. But I don't know if it was Masaaki Yuasa good.
Yeah, I really liked Look Back, but I don't think it reaches the heights of...
Well, I mean,
they're
different things. The juice from Look Back is coming mostly from the script, I would say, in my mind. Everything that I really enjoyed about that story is from the story and the characters and the way Fujimoto, like, presents them. And I think that the animation looks good, but it's not like a visual cornucopia exploding colors everywhere like like Inuo, which fucking, like, there are sequences that I'm still thinking about, like, over and over in my head, just like from how good and visually interesting they were. So yeah, absolutely, everybody's got to go watch it. It's really good.
Go watch it.
Oh god. Okay, well, I think that we've carried on long enough today. Would you agree?
Yeah, I guess so. Why did we talk about Silent Hill so long?
Sometimes you just got to get it out of your system, I think.
Oh yeah, it was burning a hole in your brain. I get it. Okay,
a little bit it was. All right. Handsome, dear, tall, beautiful listeners, thanks again for hanging out with us, listening to us ramble about Silent Hill, and I guess some actual good anime, but mostly Silent Hill this time. Go like us on YouTube, subscribe, download, leave comments. We like that stuff. And
watch the good shit.
Yeah, watch the good shit. And next time, maybe we'll talk about some more premieres. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah,
play
yeah,
it by
yeah.
ear.
We'll fit some more in, unless there's more things we want to talk about Silent Hill movie.
All right. Until next time.
Bye.
Mid is bad. We live in quality inflation, so anything that's not good is bad.